T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Perhaps he's a late bloomer, but the idea, I keep hearing about all these insiders talking about how great he is, and my thing is, Belichick watched him for a year and still sat around hoping Tom Brady signed. Belichick, when Garoppolo got drafted, the first year there was buzz about him, the first camp there was buzz about him, the first preseason there was buzz about him. People were into Jimmy Garoppolo, so much so Tom Brady went to the owner and said, get him out of here. Brady, there was no buzz about Jared Stidham. As an old, struggling Tom Brady, we didn't even suggest Stidham should play. So I never bought into the garage band that just didn't get a break. I don't, you know, like, it's like comedy. Oh, this guy was really funny. He never got a break. I hope Jared Stidham works. But there's not even a buzz about it. Belichick wanted Brady back. I don't buy it. I want to see it. And by the way, I could argue they have the worst weapons in the league. He's going to elevate those. I don't buy it. And I hope the kid works. I mean, you don't want to see New England be unwatchable. They already have a conservative system. A conservative system, no weapons, and a bad quarterback is terrible football. I love Belichick, the best coach I've ever seen. But when insiders start telling me about somebody and there's no buzz all these years in, a guy that played in the SEC against Alabama, and I think he, one of the years he beat Alabama, and he got drafted in the fourth round, and we were like, yeah, that's about where he is. Maybe he's the world's latest bloomer at quarterback.
All right, welcome in. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour and a half or so. The number is 617-779-7937. All right, so what you heard there was Colin Cowherd earlier this week talking about Jarrett Stidham. And just to kind of summarize what he said, he said that perhaps he's a late bloomer, but the idea, I keep hearing all these insiders talking about how great he is. My thing is Belichick watching him for a year, and he still sat around hoping Brady signed. When Garoppolo got drafted the first year, there was buzz about him. The first camp, there was buzz about him. He goes on to say, as an old struggling Tom Brady, we didn't even suggest Jarrett Stidham should play. I never bought into the garage band that didn't get a break, whatever that means. He said, I hope Jarrett Stidham works, but there's no buzz about him. Belichick wanted Brady back. I don't buy it. I want to see it. And by the way, I could argue they have the worst weapons in the league. Well, take away the argument about the weapons for a second here and just focus on what he was saying to begin this thing out. And this is where our Colin Cowherd just completely lost me on the take he had this week regarding Jarrett Stidham. So his whole premise from the start is he says that Belichick watched him for a year and still wanted Tom Brady to stay. Well, who believes that Belichick wanted Tom Brady to remain a New England Patriot? Who out there actually believes that? Because the biggest people in the Brady camp even disagree with this. Even all of you out there that are pro-Brady and you're still pissed off that Tom Brady is a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you would acknowledge that the reason Tom Brady's not here is because Bill Belichick didn't want him here. So I don't know where he comes up with this idea that Bill Belichick wanted Tom Brady back. So if Bill wanted Tom back, would he have offered him less money than he made the previous season? Remember, Dale Arnold had the report. Less than $23 million, of course, would be what he was being offered because that's what he made in 2019. And he was offering Tom Brady less than that. So if you really wanted the player back, would you be offering Tom Brady less money than he made the previous season? And then there was, what, one phone call between Brady and Belichick, apparently. Karen Garigian of the Herald had it at the time, that it didn't go well. So the phone call didn't go well. Bill was offering him less money than made a season ago. Do you really believe that Bill Belichick actually wanted Tom Brady back? You know what wanting Tom Brady back would have looked like? It would have looked like this. A 2-year, $50 million deal completely guaranteed like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers gave him. It's the Kobe Bryant appreciation contract that the Lakers gave Kobe, the late great Kobe Bryant, at the end of his career after a torn Achilles, 2 years, $48 million. If Bill Belichick wanted Tom Brady back, he would have given Tom Brady what he wanted because he knew what Tom Brady wanted. So, by the way, Bill did this negotiation or lack thereof, and he knew that Tom wanted to leave. Right. So this whole negotiation, by him not going head over heels for Tom Brady, he's implying to you that he doesn't want Tom Brady back. He's not going to come out and say, hey, I don't want Tom anymore. But by not offering him more than $23 million, by not offering him multi-years, he's telling you that he doesn't want Tom Brady to remain a member of the New England Patriots, and he's willing to move on. So Colin Cowherd's whole premise this week about why Bill Belichick apparently doesn't believe in Jarrett Stidham makes no sense, because his premise is centered around that Bill Belichick watched Jarrett Stidham for a year and wanted Tom back. That's just not true. Bill would have taken Tom back on his specific terms, and that's it. 1 year deal, below market value, less money than last year. And you knew that Tom Brady was never going to take that deal. That's the only way that Belichick was willing to bring Brady back. It was on his terms. So we all know that Belichick never wanted Brady back. And if he really did, he would have done what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did, or what the Lakers did to Kobe at the end of his career, giving him 2 years, $48 million. In the case of what the Bucks gave Brady, giving him 2 years, $50 million. If Belichick really wanted him back, that would have been out there. So this whole idea that the reason we shouldn't believe in Jarrett Stidham is because Belichick wanted Brady back, that just wasn't true. It's not true. We all know that basically Belichick packed Brady's bags. And all of you that I heard from over the past couple of months that are upset that Brady left, you have been blaming Belichick for this whole thing the whole time. So even the pro-Brady people can't agree with Colin Cowherd on this one. Now, the second question I have is this. If Bill didn't want to play Stidham, and if Bill wasn't confident in Stidham, how do you explain this offseason? So first of all, let's look at this. These are the quarterbacks that became available this offseason. Jameis Winston, former number one overall pick. I'm not the biggest Jameis Winston fan. I'm just laying out who was available. Teddy Bridgewater went 5-0 last year. Phillip Rivers, really good quarterback for a number of years, although he did tail off last year. Nobody would argue that. Andy Dalton. Case Keenum, who has started 62 NFL games. Cam Newton, by the way, is still out there. All the reporting, though, is that the Patriots aren't interested. Did the Patriots go hard after any of these guys? Winston, Bridgewater, Rivers, Dalton, Keenum, Newton? No. How about the draft? Well, the Pats didn't go after Jordan Love at the tail end of the first round. Of course, he ends up with the Green Bay Packers. They didn't take a shot on anybody in the middle rounds. They didn't draft Jacob Eason. They didn't draft Jake Fromm. They didn't even go in the second round and get a guy like Jalen Hurts like the Eagles did. So the Patriots didn't do any of that. With the most quarterbacks ever hitting the market, the Patriots didn't sign one of them. Okay, they didn't sign any of these guys. Instead, who did they bring back to the Patriots? Everybody's favorite quarterback. The career backup Brian Hoyer for his third run with the team. Okay, oh yeah, they signed Brian Lewerke and Jamar Smith. Two guys that most people here never heard of before the draft. I knew who Lewerke was because he played at Michigan State. I had no idea who Jamar Smith was before the draft. Played at, what, Louisiana Tech, whatever it is. Louisiana Tech, I believe, is where he went. But anyway, so if Belichick didn't believe in Stidham, and he was so concerned about losing Brady, don't you think that he would have done something more impactful in terms of the quarterback position? If you disagree with Bill and think that Bill should have done something with the quarterback position, that's a different conversation. That's totally different, okay? But the point that Cowherd was making this week is that basically that Bill saw Stidham for a year and essentially wasn't sold. That's essentially what Colin Cowherd's saying this week, is Bill Belichick didn't believe in Stidham because he wanted Brady back, which we already debunked that. That certainly wasn't true. Belichick didn't want Brady back. And he's also putting it out there that clearly Belichick doesn't believe in Stidham if he wanted Brady back. Well, that's not true either, because think about his behavior this offseason, Belichick, in terms of how he addressed the quarterback position. He essentially did nothing. The only thing you can really do with Bill is you can accuse him of maybe being too high on Jarrett Stidham. That certainly could be the case, because you think about it. The guy that you now will turn to if Jarrett Stidham doesn't work out is Brian Hoyer. Okay, career record of 16-22, career completion percentage of 50, And he's averaged 148 yards per game in his career. This is the guy that, by the way, Jarrett Stidham already beat out last season. So the only guy that essentially Bill Belichick brought in to compete with Jarrett Stidham for the job is somebody that Jarrett Stidham already beat out last year. So I just don't understand where Colin Cowherd can get off this week essentially saying that Belichick wanted Brady back, and it's essentially because he doesn't believe in Stidham. Everything that Belichick has done would tell you what Colin Cowherd's saying. It's the complete opposite, okay? Think about all these guys that are available. Jameis Winston, all right, turnover-prone quarterback, but a former number one overall selection. All it cost the New Orleans Saints to bring in Jameis Winston, $1.1 million. That's all it was. $1.1 million. If Bill Belichick thought that he could get an upgrade over his quarterback, Jarrett Stidham, for $1.1 million, don't you think he would have kicked the tires on that? Don't you think he would have called Jameis Winston's agent up and say, you know what, yeah, we'll take a shot on you? Because the Patriots can offer Jameis Winston more of an opportunity to start, you would think, than the Saints, who have Drew Brees, Hall of Fame quarterback, literally the most accurate quarterback in the history of the NFL, right? So they have a better opportunity here, you would think, on paper. And Belichick wasn't remotely interested in Jameis Winston whatsoever. If he didn't have faith in the player, he would have added more guys to the quarterback position this offseason. Everything was available. You had veterans with a ton of experience. When we talk about guys like Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, all these quarterbacks, Phillip Rivers, all these guys that were available, they didn't do any of that. And in terms of the draft, they didn't even select a single quarterback in the draft. So all that was available, and they weren't remotely interested with that whatsoever. So you can't really argue that Bill doesn't believe in the quarterback. Now, this idea that Colin Cowherd also has that there is no buzz around Jarrett Stidham. He compares this great preseason Jimmy Garoppolo had to Jarrett Stidham. And oh, by the way, if you look at the numbers from their first preseasons, Jarrett Stidham was actually better than Jimmy G. So Jimmy G's first preseason with the Patriots, his completion percentage was 58. Stidham's was 67.8. So significant check in the department of Jarrett Stidham. And he also had more yards per attempt, and he actually showed the ability to run a little bit too. 17 rushes for 88 yards. He was actually better in the preseason than was Jimmy Garoppolo. And remember, part of the reason there was buzz around Jimmy G in that 2014 preseason is because nobody thought the Patriots were going in that direction in the draft. Remember, Brady was coming off a 2013 season where he wasn't particularly great. That was a down year for Brady, and I don't want to have a big conversation about all the injuries. Gronk went down that season. They didn't have a ton of weapons. I'm not dismissing all that, but that was the age normally you would think, all right, probably time to move on from the quarterback. That's at least what Belichick was thinking at the age of 36. So when they drafted Garoppolo with a high pick in the second round, people were looking at it as if, okay, this legitimately could be Brady's replacement. With Stidham, he was a fourth-round guy with the 133rd overall selection, so nobody at that point in time was thinking, all right, this is the next guy after Brady. Nobody thought, hey, Belichick's going after this guy to replace Brady. Nobody thought that at the time. And then the other thing he pointed out is that Tom Brady wanted Jimmy Garoppolo out of town and essentially pointing out that Brady wasn't threatened by Stidham being here. Well, it's a little bit different, okay? Jimmy G, remember, Jimmy G got the opportunity to play in 2016 in his third season when Tom Brady was suspended for the joke that was Deflategate. But he played pretty well in the six quarters that he got the opportunity to against Arizona. They get the win, and then he plays against Miami before going down with that shoulder injury, right? So Brady, remember, at that point in time, the trade happened in 2017. This was after Jimmy Garoppolo had been a member of the organization for 3 years and actually played at a relatively high level in 2016 when he filled in for Brady. And this is when Brady didn't have a long-term extension with the organization. So when Brady sees Jimmy Garoppolo in year four, entering his free agent year, if you will, he sees a guy that could legitimately take his job in a couple of months. He never saw that with Jarrett Stidham at that point in time. So the reason that Brady wanted Jimmy Garoppolo out of town was clear. This is the guy that was going to take his job. He knew that Bill could have replaced him with Jimmy Garoppolo the following season. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's totally different than Jarrett Stidham situation, because Stidham was brought in as a fourth-round pick, 133rd overall selection, and last year was his rookie season. It'd be one thing if we were having this conversation after Stidham plays 3 years behind Brady and actually got the opportunity to start a couple of games like Jimmy Garoppolo did. So those two sort of situations. It's not an apples to apples comparison to compare Jimmy Garoppolo and Jarrett Stidham when Jimmy Garoppolo was 3 years into his career and when you had a guy like, or essentially 4 years, 3.5 years into his career when the trade happened, and a guy like Jarrett Stidham who just finished up his first year in the NFL. It's not fair to do that. But my whole point is this. There's plenty of reasons that you can look at, and I know a lot of you aren't Stidham believers. There's plenty of things that you can look at with Stidham. You can say, well, you know, if you look at the history of the NFL draft, most of the time it's a first-round pick that starts at quarterback or a second-round pick, right? So if you look at the league right now, Russell Wilson, a third-round pick, Kirk Cousins, a third-round pick, and we all know Brady, a sixth-round pick. Those are really the only impactful starters in the NFL right now that went after the third round. And even Kirk Cousins, like he's good, but he's never winning at a high level. There are still questions about how good is Kirk Cousins, right? But for the most part, it's guys that are first round selections. You look at the fact that if you look at the AFC North right now, Joe Burrow, Ben Roethlisberger, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield. All of those guys in that division were first-round draft picks, and two of them were first overall selection. So if you want to look at the fact, well, most of the time it's first-round picks that have success at the quarterback position, or you want to look at the fact and say, and there's extenuating circumstances to this, and I've got into why Jarrett Stidham's numbers were not as good as second year at Auburn to his first year, but if you want to say, hey, his completion percentage fell off, the team wasn't as good, Stidham was not as good as second year at Auburn as his first year, fine. All those you can use for an argument on why Jarrett Stidham is not going to project to be a great NFL quarterback, I'm fine with you doubting Jarrett Stidham because nobody's really seen him play at the NFL level outside of the preseason. I'm fine with all that. But to make this crap up about the fact that the reason that we shouldn't believe in Jarrett Stidham is because Belichick wanted to keep Brady, that isn't true. That's been an argument here the whole time. People have been pissed about Bill Belichick because he didn't want Brady anymore. So it's just not true that Belichick wanted Brady to remain a member of the organization. That is false. That is not true. And then secondarily, to basically use that to essentially make the argument that, well, Jarrett Stidham, he had a whole look at him last year and he never wanted to replace Jarrett Stidham, or he never wanted to replace Tom Brady with Jarrett Stidham, for that to be the argument, that just makes no sense either. Like, for that to be part of the idea that means that Belichick doesn't believe in Jarrett Stidham, that just doesn't make sense. Because if you outline everything that Belichick did this offseason with the quarterback position, that tells you, if you can accuse Belichick of being anything this offseason, it's being too high on Stidham. That's the only thing you could argue, being too high on Stidham. We've had countless people on this very station get upset with the fact that all these quarterbacks are going to different teams. The Andy Daltons, the Jameis Winstons, all these quarterbacks, the Phillip Rivers, these guys have become available and they don't come to the Patriots because Belichick doesn't want him. Countless people have been upset. Oh, why don't you take a shot on this guy? Why don't you take a shot on this guy? Oh, why didn't you take anybody in the draft, right? That's been a criticism of Bill Belichick. So to say that Belichick essentially doesn't believe in the player, that couldn't be further from the truth because everything he's done this offseason is telling you at this point in time that he's all in with Stidham. He's ready to give Stidham an opportunity and see what Stidham can do. All right, a lot more to get into. And there's one prominent analyst who does not buy into the Bucs hype. I want to get to that. And I have another reason you shouldn't be upset that Tom Brady left the team. A lot more to get into. Brian Barrett with you for about the next hour or so right here on WEI. The number is 617-779-7937. We'll get you a trending in just a second here.
If this was a normal fall with Jarrett Stidham as quarterback, if Bill Belichick is your biggest draw for the gate, I don't care how great his press conferences are for humor, he's not going to bring people through the doors. We've spent a lot of time and money over 20 years following this team. Some people are going to say, they kind of suck right now. Wake me up when they're better. And I think a lot of Patriots fans, the diehards, Trenny, are more than happy to see that happen. If you're not into it, get out.
All right, Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so. The number is 617-779-7937. That was Tommy Kern earlier this week talking about the fact that there's going to be less interest in the Patriots now. And oh, by the way, on the secondary seat market, tickets down 39% from a year ago. He mentions the fact that people aren't coming to watch Belichick. They were coming to watch Brady, et cetera. Also, part of it is where we are in terms of the economic climate. The fact that people are dealing with, hey, how do I spend my money now that some of us aren't working? Some people out there are not working right now. So there's that to deal with as well. But the one thing I will point out, you realize that Belichick is a draw right now. Belichick is legitimately a draw. How else do you explain the fact that the Patriots coming up next season are going to play in 7 main window games? By main window games, I mean 3 on Monday Night Football, or rather 2 on Monday Night Football. You have the Sunday Night Football games and the 4:25 Eastern window on CBS. The Patriots have seven of those games next year. Seven of them. They're actually tied with the Bucs for the most primetime games in the NFL next season at five. Belichick's the only coach in the NFL where it's actually a draw just to tune in to see what the coach is going to do. And the reason for that is obviously we want to see, or not just we, not just us here, but all over the country want to see, hey, can Belichick actually get it done without Brady? So Belichick actually is a draw right now if you look at the way that the games are organized in terms of the national television schedule. But I did want to get to this. So Aaron Rodgers had his first press conference this week, or conference call, I should say. Obviously, he can't really have a press conference, but he had a conference call this week. And it's interesting to me to compare and contrast the Rodgers era in Green Bay and just how things ended here with Tom Brady and the Patriots, because Rodgers mentioned the fact during this conference call, of course, they drafted Jordan Love to the Packers. If you didn't know, obviously everyone knows, it was a massive story. But nonetheless, this is the first time that Rodgers has actually come out and talked about it publicly. And this is what Rodgers had to say. You know, if I were to retire in the organization's timetable, then it's an easy decision. But if there comes a time where I feel like I can still play at a high level and my body feels great, you know, then there's other guys that have gone on and played elsewhere. Obviously, we know this well here with Tom Brady opting to finish in Tampa Bay. Some of the other guys in NFL history, remember, Rodgers took Brett Favre's job. We saw him play for the Jets and the Minnesota Vikings. We saw Joe Montana finish with the Chiefs. Heck, we saw Peyton Manning go to Denver. So I bring this up to compare and contrast the situation with Green Bay. Whatever now happens with Rodgers, it feels like, from my perspective, that with Aaron Rodgers as a member of the Green Bay Packers, it's going to feel like Rodgers and the Packers left a lot of meat on the bone. And the one word that I would use to describe the Rodgers run in Green Bay is underwhelming. And that is certainly something you cannot argue with Tom Brady with the Patriots. So when you look at it, in his third year, after he finally gets in 2008 after getting drafted in 2005, but in his third year in the 2010 season, they go on that late season run as the sixth seed. They go all the way to the Super Bowl and they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. The next year, Rodgers and the Packers, remember, they almost go undefeated. They finally lose to the Chiefs in, I believe, week 16 of the season. And then they end up getting upset against the Giants in the postseason. We all know what happened that year in the Super Bowl. I don't want to rehash that. But nonetheless, the feeling was, hey, Rodgers is going to go on this run for a long time. He's going to rule the NFL. And you look at it, and you said at the time, all these analysts across the sport were saying, this is the most talented quarterback that we've ever seen. This is the most talented guy we've ever seen. Now we do that with Pat Mahomes. But just a couple of years ago, Aaron Rodgers was that guy. We're all saying, oh, this guy is so talented. The Packers is going to be so good for so long. Well, not so fast, because they've lost a bunch of NFC Championship games since then. They lost to the Seahawks. They just got crushed by the Niners. The Falcons in 16 absolutely crushed them. They've never made it back to the Super Bowl since Rodgers won the Super Bowl in 2010. They haven't made it back to the Super Bowl. And if you really look at it, what has happened? Well, the coach never evolved. Mike McCarthy's system got old to the point where Rodgers was upset that you look around the league and you have all these offenses that are doing cool things, and Rodgers was just in this old West Coast offense. They weren't changing anything. Rodgers was upset about that. Eventually, they have to fire Mike McCarthy. And the roster was just never consistent in Green Bay, unlike what we had here in New England watching the Patriots. So in 2010, the Packers had the top-ranked scoring defense in the NFL, less than 16 points per game. They win the Super Bowl. After that, the Packers never had a top 10 scoring defense again. They never had a top 10 scoring defense again after that season with Rodgers as the quarterback, right? And of course, he still is the quarterback. So basically, the entire decade, everything was on Aaron Rodgers in the offense. If you compare that to the Patriots this past decade in the Tom Brady era, the Patriots won three Super Bowls, we all know. In those years, the Pats always had a top 10 defense in the years they won Super Bowls. 2014, the Pats were seventh in scoring defense. 2016, the Pats were first in scoring defense, and in 2018, the Pats were sixth in scoring defense. So Belichick, for the bulk of the decade, had a good defense, and at times, a borderline elite defense. I know in 2014, the Pats only ranked seventh in terms of scoring defense, but remember how good that defense was? Prime Darrelle Revis, who was basically a hired gun for a season, Chandler Jones was really good, Dante Hightower was really good, Devin McCourty, like, that defense was great, okay? And also, Jamie Collins, when he was young. And you look at this now, you look at the offenses, and you compare and contrast what Rodgers had in Green Bay and what Brady and what the Patriots were working with here in New England. Outside of 2019, last year, okay, I'm acknowledging last year was bad. The weapons were not good. But outside of that, you had the best tight end in the NFL, Gronk, for a decade, basically 9 years. And I understand he missed some time, but you had Edelman. You had, for a short run there, Aaron Hernandez, who We know what happened off the field, but on the field, he was really good when he was actually there. You had Danny Amendola, who was really good for a number of years, and you brought in a guy like Brandon Cooks for a year that had an outstanding season in 2017. So it seemed like Brady always had the proper weapons, and then you also look at the fact that he always had that guy that could catch the ball out of the backfield, especially this decade when you're talking about James White. Before that, it was Shane Vereen, Danny Woodhead, and then going back to the last decade, of course, you had Kevin Faulk as well. You look at Rodgers, in terms of his weapons, they start off the decade really good. Remember, you had JerMichael Finley, Donald Driver, Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, right? Driver got old. Jennings went to Minnesota. Finley was forced to retire because of neck injuries. And Nelson was good for a while. Nobody's dismissing that, but then he gets hurt. And so for the past few years, he's essentially been left with Devontae Adams, and they had Jimmy Graham, who sucks. They finally took a shot on like a big-name free agent, did the Packers. But they did it at the tail end of Jimmy Graham's career, if you will. And he's not good anymore, okay? So you had a bad Jimmy Graham, and you've had Devontae Adams over the past few years. Adams is a stud, but if you look at last year, the Packers' second-leading receiver was a guy by the name of Alan Lazard, okay? He averaged 29 yards per game. Rodgers has had massive inconsistency at the skill positions. Brady, outside of 2019, you've always had a couple of guys you can depend on. You got James White out of the backfield. You got Gronk. You got Edelman. You got Amendola. With Aaron Rodgers, for the past 3 to 4 years, it's been just Devontae Adams. Other than that, he's got nobody he can depend on whatsoever. So when I look at what happened with Rodgers, it feels like there was a lot left there. You had a guy that won a Super Bowl at the age of 27, and it appeared he was taking over the league, and all you got out of that was one Lombardi trophy. One, that's it. Think about what the Patriots have done for the majority of Brady's time here. They've had the best coach in the league, who changed all the time, right? Just look at the defense. They've gone from a 3-4 to a 4-3, back to a 3-4. And then you look at offensively. Mike McCarthy's an offensive-minded coach, and he never really adjusted his system. If you look at what Belichick has done over the years, it started off way back when in 2001, a run-heavy offense, and then they allow Brady to open things up, especially when you're getting into the 05, 06, 07 arena, especially when they get Moss. They're throwing the ball all over the field. And then you go to the two tight end look that took over the NFL for a couple of years. And then you transition into 2017. He's throwing the ball down the field again when you get a guy like Brandon Cooks. And then going to 2018, you become more of a run-heavy team at the end of that season. So even though Belichick's not an offensive-minded coach like Mike McCarthy is, Belichick's always altered his system based on the talent that he has around him, right? And also, for the bulk of Brady's tenure here with the Patriots, you had arguably the best line coach in the history of the league in Dante Scarnecchia. So for the past decade, the defense has been great as well, outside maybe a 7-year stretch, or I should say outside of a 4-year stretch. The past 7 years, it's been good. But like, really, if I go back to 09 to 13, that's when the Patriots defense was really bad. But other than that, Patriots defense has been really good this decade. If you look at the Packers, they could never figure out the running back position. They still haven't figured out their defense. They've improved, but did you see what happened to them in that NFC Championship game? They ran for 285 yards, did the Niners, against that Packers defense. Jimmy G threw the ball 8 times in that game. That's how the Packers defense, oh, they took a big step forward. Okay, they just ran, did the Niners, for 285 yards of them. The quarterback threw the ball 8 times. It's like a game from 1970, okay? So if you're a Packers fan, the one word I would use is, for the Rodgers era, is underwhelming. A guy that you needed to surround with the proper talent, with the proper coaching, with the proper personnel, and you were never able to do it. You look at what the Patriots did with Tom Brady. 6 Super Bowls, they played in 9. So, of course, we take out the 08 season because Brady was hurt, and his rookie season, he didn't play. Half the time that Brady was the quarterback for the Patriots, they appeared in the Super Bowl. Half the seasons he was here with Rodgers, he hasn't been back to the Super Bowl since 2010. This is a guy that was supposed to take over the NFL. He was supposed to take over the league, and he hasn't been back to a Super Bowl. And the way that I look at it now, looking at that Packers team, we all just saw what they did in the first round, right? They went after a quarterback. This is a team that was in the NFC Championship game. So instead of addressing a need, like another wide receiver to use outside of Devontae Adams, they go after Aaron Rodgers' replacement. In the second round, they go after a guy that we all know well here from Boston College to be a bruising running back. Okay, well, he doesn't really fit the modern-day NFL in terms of a pass-catching back. Well, that's not great for Aaron Rodgers. So I project that Aaron Rodgers is not going to win another Super Bowl as the Green Bay Packers quarterback. I don't see that happening in the near future whatsoever. So he's going to go down as the Packers quarterback, a 2-time MVP with just 1 Super Bowl ring. So all of you that are upset that Bill Belichick has moved on from Tom Brady, just look at the other examples of elite quarterbacks around the NFL and how things went for them. Okay, because Aaron Rodgers, from a talent perspective, everybody would say he has more talent than Brady. I'm not disputing the fact that Brady's the significantly better player, the way more accomplished player. I'm not disputing any of that. All I'm saying is Aaron Rodgers was an unbelievable talent. We all thought that he was going to take over the league. This guy played in one Super Bowl. That's it. He played in one Super Bowl in his NFL career. So when I compare that to what Tom Brady did here with the Patriots and what Bill Belichick did as the guy designing the roster, as the guy game planning for certain opponents, what we had here was something where we shouldn't be upset with the way it ended, okay? The way that this thing turned out is incredible in and of itself. And this could have been your reality if you weren't well run with the best coach in the NFL, a guy that has been really great building rosters over the years. You would not have this level of accomplishment. So for all these years, and I understand at the end, the Brady-Belichick relationship was not great, but they were able to put that aside for all this time and appear in Super Bowl after Super Bowl after Super Bowl. Okay, they got everything out of what they were as an organization. There's no meat left on the bone whatsoever. I mean, we can go through individual losses if you want to. For example, the 06 loss to the Colts. Okay, that sucked. The 07 loss to the Giants. That sucked. The loss to the Giants in the Super Bowl in what, 2011? That sucked. Okay, you can look at a handful of losses that, yeah, they sucked. But you appeared in 9 Super Bowls. You got every opportunity to keep appearing in the big game. So they got everything they possibly could have gotten out of Tom Brady, okay? And you look at that and you juxtapose that to other franchise-level quarterbacks that we've seen across the sport, a guy like Aaron Rodgers, a 2-time MVP. Think about how poorly that organization was run to the point where this guy only appears in one Super Bowl. So just this week, hearing Aaron Rodgers come out and say, hey, I could see my career ending elsewhere, and makes sense because Brady's is going to, Joe Montana's did, Brett Favre's did, etc. But if you kind of go back and you look at what Aaron Rodgers has accomplished in Green Bay, completely underwhelming. And one other thing that I would mention, when you compare Rodgers to Brady, you can't dispute the fact that Brady has been the significantly better leader when you have all these issues with Rodgers in the locker room. Now, if you want to argue some of the stuff with Brady the past few years, okay, didn't go to OTAs, etc. But Rodgers has been a problem in Green Bay for a number of years where it seems like for 5 years he was trying to get Mike McCarthy fired before he was fired. Okay, legitimately trying to get him fired. So Rodgers has had issues with teammates as well. Brady never really had issues with teammates or anything along those lines. In fact, he's the embodiment of what a leader should be. With Aaron Rodgers, you could argue, oh, it's to the contrary, and his whole personality's not great. I mean, the guy doesn't even get along with his own family. It's a mess with Aaron Rodgers. So I just thought this week, hearing Aaron Rodgers in that conference call, made me think, okay, when we take a step back and we're not as upset, or not me in particular, but most people aren't as upset anymore that Tom Brady's not a member of the Patriots, think to what it could have been. It could have been Aaron Rodgers winning one Super Bowl as a member of the Green Bay Packers. Talk about wasting a great quarterback for a decade. All right, a lot more to get in, or more than a decade, like 15 years. A lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937. I will get into this new Rooney Rule, which just makes no sense. I believe I understand what Roger Goodell was doing, but the execution of the plan is just an absolute joke. And I also want to get to one analyst who is not high on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers whatsoever. I kind of agree with him. I'll get into that in just a little bit. The number 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you till 2:30 here on WEI. All right, Brian Barrett with you until 2:30. The number is 617-779-7937. My whole point about the Aaron Rodgers conversation is just when you look at what the Packers did, they never surrounded him with the proper team. The coaching was below average for most of Rodgers' career. Mike McCarthy was good when he started, and then he never really made adjustments. That's kind of what you have to do. You have to evolve as you go on in your coaching career. It's like Phil Jackson. He was great, one of the greatest coaches of all time. But when you're trying to put the triangle offense into the modern-day NBA when you're running the Knicks a couple of years ago, it's not going to work. The way that the league is going now, that offense is not going to be effective. With Mike McCarthy, he never really evolved off the offense that he had for all those years. And the fact that they thought, hey, just because we have Aaron Rodgers, he can carry us. He can carry the offense. And they never invested in a skill position in the first round tells you that they don't know exactly what they're doing. And for the past 4 years, they've had basically one receiver in Devontae Adams. The rest of them have not been good. Yeah, at the beginning of his career, they had good receivers, but they don't anymore. With Brady, for the majority of his career, he always had the proper weapons. And for the majority of his career, outside of really from 09 to 13, he always had a really good defense. He had a good defense. He had the proper weapons around him. So when you look at Rodgers' time in Green Bay, it's going to be looked back upon as really underwhelming. With Brady, they got all the juice out of that particular situation. Everything you could ask for out of the Patriots in terms of what you could get, the success level with Brady, you were able to achieve all that. Now, I did want to get to this. And by the way, the number is 617-779-7937. So Chris Sims said this week, well, we all know he's not the biggest Brady fan. This is what he had to say this week on Pro Football Talk with Mike Florio. We're all anointing them champions, referring to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It is just not as easy as said as it is done. Quote, there are still questions there in Tampa Bay. Now, here's the thing. Chris Sims, remember, he's not the biggest Brady guy. So if you go back to last year, Chris Sims did this list before the season where he gave you his top 40 quarterbacks in the NFL. And I give him credit. He came on this station on WEI to argue it with the guys on OMF. But he made a list of the best quarterbacks entering the season, and he had Tom Brady at number 9 on the list. And now that you look back on it, wasn't that bad by Chris Sims? It was actually a pretty good projection based on Tom Brady last season. He had Rodgers 1. Obviously, that wasn't true. Rodgers did not have a great year. Pat Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, who retired, Deshaun Watson, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, all in front of Tom Brady. Obviously, Newton barely played last season. Matt Ryan did not have a great season. But if you look at where Brady ranks, 9th would be pretty close to accurate at this particular point in time based on the younger quarterbacks of the league, etc. Remember, here everybody was outraged. Oh, Tom Brady, how can he not be in the top 3? How can he not be in the top 5? Well, last year he didn't play like that. But nonetheless, Chris Sims before last season has Tom Brady ranked pretty low. He's not high on the Buccaneers whatsoever. And remember, Chris Sims was on the Patriots coaching staff in some form in 2012. He was a coaching assistant, I believe. So my hunch is something happened between Tom Brady and Chris Sims, because he goes after Tom Brady like crazy. He really does. Every opportunity he gets, he goes after Tom Brady. So I think there's something there on a personal level. But I do believe when we look at this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, there has been a ton of hype around him. I understand the fact they're interesting for the first time in ages, but it appears that most people believe that, hey, you're just going to snap your fingers and the Brady magic's going to come back. Gronk comes out of retirement. He's going to be the same guy. And you have Evans and you have Chris Godwin. Everything's going to work out well. Well, when I look at it, one thing that they're missing is that pass catching running back. Maybe Ronald Jones can turn into that guy because he's never really been asked to catch the ball out of the backfield. They drafted this kid, Keyshawn Vaughn, out of Vanderbilt. Maybe they imagine he's the guy that can play the James White role. But should we just underestimate that Brady's always had that type of player? And it doesn't appear on the roster in Tampa Bay that he has that type of guy. Not to mention the fact, I just went through the Patriots defenses over the past decade or so. 14, 16, 18. All of those defenses, you had ranked top 10 in scoring defense. And I get that the Buccaneers were put in awful positions last year because the ineptitude of Jameis Winston throwing 30 interceptions. But again, that defense was not particularly great if you look at the metrics. Now, some of them were better than you would assume they would be because of the fact that they were put in bad positions all the time. But we're making a big assumption. When you look at this team, there's not a lot of stars on this defense where you just say, oh yeah, all of a sudden this defense is going to be great next season. Now, they'll be better just based on the fact that the quarterback's not going to turn the ball over as much. But when Brady's winning Super Bowls, he has a top 10 scoring defense. Are we so sure that the Buccaneers defense is going to be a top 10 scoring defense next season? I can't make that assessment right away and say, oh yeah, well now, hey, they got Tom Brady offensively, so the defense is going to be this incredible unit. Todd Bowles, he's got more recognition over the past couple of weeks for being this great defensive coordinator than I ever can remember. When Todd Bowles is the coach of the Jets, nobody was giving him praise. Now all of a sudden, because Tom Brady's a member of the Buccaneers, oh, Todd Bowles, what a system they got in Tampa Bay. They blitz like crazy. What? When were people saying Todd Bowles a great defensive coordinator before Tom Brady got there? So just because Brady walks in the building, all of a sudden the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the defense is great. Well, I don't know how that computes, because we saw from 09 to 13, the defense wasn't great here. Tom Brady doesn't automatically make your defense better. And in terms of the personnel, they had one of the worst secondaries in the NFL last year, and it's not as if they got significantly better. Now, I know they drafted Antoine Winfield Jr. out of Minnesota, but he's a rookie and he's one guy. He's not going to immediately make that defense like one of the better units in the NFL. So I'm not drinking all the Bucks Kool-Aid either. And secondarily, I would also point this out. I saw a dip off in Brady's production last year. There were throws that he missed. And I don't want to get into the whole conversation about, oh, he didn't have the weapons, he didn't have the offensive line. All I'm pointing out, there are throws that Tom Brady ordinarily makes that he didn't make last year. And there's also the fact that it's a shortened off season due to the coronavirus pandemic. It's a new offense that Brady and Bruce Arians have to mold together, which the Bruce Arians offense, totally different than the Brady offense, okay? So are we just going to assume it's going to be the Brady offense? Do we assume it's the Arians offense? Can Brady play in the Arians offense where he's just consistently pushing the ball down the field? These are a lot of things that are question marks that we don't have answers to yet. So I am with Chris Sims on the fact that I believe the Bucs are getting overhyped. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Spencer in Beverly. What's up, Spencer?
Hey, Brian, great show.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, great. I love listening to you on Sunday. I look forward to it. So real quick, I just want to go over a couple of things. I hear what you're saying about the throws from Brady and how they weren't what they've been in the years past, but there are real reasons for that. And there is something called more pressure on the quarterback, and the fact that they can't hold puts a lot more pressure on Brady to release the ball quicker and maybe do things that he's unaccustomed of doing. As he gets older, he needs more protection. As he gets older, he needs better talent around him. And I think what you're going to see when he plays for Tampa is that he does have a better offensive personnel going into the season than he would have had here with New England, and I believe his numbers will come up because of that. He is still capable of throwing the ball 20, 30, 40 yards down the field and being very, very accurate.
Look, two things, Spencer. So first off, I would say there's no excuses for Brady in Tampa. He picked the weapons, right? He picked the place to go to, and they drafted Tristan Wirfs in the first round, the kid out of Iowa who everybody was head over heels in love with entering the draft. Nobody could believe he dropped to the middle of the first round. Some people thought he could be the first lineman off the board. So he chose the destination. And then the other portion I would look at is last year, one of the things that goes under the radar, Brady was dealing with all these tic-tac injuries throughout the season. Remember, you had Belichick pointing out that, hey, Stidham was getting time in practice. Brady was dealing with an elbow injury, and he was dealing with a knee issue, and he was dealing with an Achilles issue. So maybe it was the injuries piling up. But when I look at those injuries continuing to pile up, I look at age with Brady, that once you start to get those little injuries, those tend to pile up over the years. So if Brady doesn't perform at a high level next year in Tampa Bay, then we have to acknowledge that 2019 wasn't an outlier. That was the start of the end. Really, 2018. Yeah, 2018, he wasn't as great either.
That's 100% correct, but I don't believe that's what you're going to see. I believe you're going to see a revitalized Tom Brady, a revitalized organization. Guys on the team are inspired. The entire Tampa Bay area is inspired. I think you're going to get some juice out of them. It's not dead yet. And my last point I want to make real quickly, Tuukka Rask was on TV last week. I don't know if you saw it. And he hasn't even stretched, let alone worked out. He admitted it. He said, I'm just spending time with my family. Come on, man. You're the goalie of Boston. And you're talking about retirement next year? And you're seriously telling me that you're not working out? And you don't really care because you're spending time with my family? But hold on, Brian. Do you think all the other guys in the Bruins are doing that? No, they're working out.
Yeah.
They're working out.
Yeah, I hope. Spencer, I appreciate the phone call, man, coming from the North Shore. I hope not. I hope other guys are getting it going. Tuukka's always been kind of odd, man. He's always been kind of odd. And when he said that a couple of weeks, probably like 6 weeks ago now, he had the comment that he could retire at the end of his contract, which is not at the end of this season, be at the end of next season. That was kind of weird to me that he would just come out and admit that. Nonetheless, this Bruins team, if they don't get to resume the season, like the Celtics, this is the start of it, right, with Jason Tatum. We've already won as Celtics fans this year, right? Because we saw the star emerge. We wanted Tatum to take that step. Hey, what was the real Tatum, the rookie year or the second year? Okay, we saw this year he emerged as a star. He's a bona fide as well. So you feel great about the Celtics going forward with that young core of Tatum and Jaylen Brown. With the Bruins, after losing in the Stanley Cup Final in Game 7, you felt like, okay, I thought the window was done. And then they come out and they're unbelievable. But if they don't get to resume the season, that's the team that really gets screwed, because right now they're the favorites to win the Stanley Cup, and the way they're playing, it's so damn impressive, and it'd be so much of a bummer if that team, battling back after such a terrible loss last year in Game 7, fighting the way they did this season and not getting to resume the season, that'd be absolutely horrible. Let's get to Bill. He's in Plymouth. What's up, Bill?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
I just wanted to touch on two things. One, just the modern era and the salary cap and how you build a team. And I mean, Belichick has done that better than anybody. Everybody kills him on his drafts over the years, which, by the way, aren't that bad if you really, really look at it. And the guy that was on before you said Tom Brady is the only Hall of Famer that Belichick ever drafted. Well, he's wrong. I mean, you got Gronk, you got Logan Mankins. You got Will Fork, who are all going in. I forget if
I don't know about Will Fork, and I don't know about Logan Mankins. If Logan Mankins got a Super Bowl, it'll probably help his case. But if you look at Richard Seymour, he's got an opportunity to get it. So, yeah, look, he's going to get...
Logan Mankins was an 8-time All-Pro. He's getting in.
Bill, to your original... To your original point, even if you want to critique the Belichick drafts over the past couple of years, he's never had a roster that wasn't good enough really to win a Super Bowl. He's always been able to put the proper guys around Brady, even if he missed out on draft picks. Well, okay, Malcolm Butler was undrafted, right? When you think about the fact he picks up Darrell Revis for a year, he trades around a late round pick for a guy like Aqib Talib. He trades for a guy like Martellus Bennett. He's always been able to build a roster. I agree with you on that.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the way he works it, is he builds his roster. I mean, draft picks nowadays have become getting the veteran who's 1 year off of his big contract, whether it's Revis, whether it's Roman Pfeiffer, whether it's Corey Dillon, Wes Welker, Junior Seau, Randy Moss. I mean, that's really how you build a team, when you get those guys in for 2 and 3 years to plug into spots. The draft picks, you get 1 out of 3. That's great, because you know what? If the draft picks are really good, 5 years down the road, you gotta pay everybody, and it screws the roster up. I mean, his plan for years and years has been, he's got the very best second team in all of football. He pays the second team better than anybody else in football, and he does that because you invariably have a whole lot of injuries, and you need to rotate guys in and out, and he's done it better than anybody. Yeah, and that's where their success is.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Bill. I appreciate the phone call. If you want to grab his line, you can. It's 617-779-7937. Even for those that want to critique Belichick's drafting ability, he's always had one of the best rosters in the NFL over the past 5 to 6 years. There's no disputing that. Look at that 2014 two deep. It's insane. The 2016 team, insane. Okay, Gronk goes down. You got Martellus Bennett. He's always been able to build a roster. So this whole thing about Belichick's draft history is hurting the Patriots. They've been in 9 Super Bowls, and they've won 6 of them. It hasn't. It hasn't hurt them, okay? Now, if you want to look in the long term and say, oh, it's the last 3 years. Okay, well, let's see in 5 years from now if it's really hurting Belichick in terms of his success. I just don't buy into it. All right, a lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937. We continue to talk about this. Do you believe that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are getting overhyped? We can get into that. And I also do want to get into this new proposed Rooney Rule. I think I understand what Roger Goodell is trying to do, but it's a really, really bad look for the league. We'll get into that in just a little bit right here on WEI.
Yeah, ultimately, we know Bruce Arians, he thinks his offense is special, and it is. It's one of the more creative, aggressive offenses in football over the last 10 years. I mean, the results speak for themselves, and... You know, you add that, Mike, and we know the no risk it, no biscuit, push the ball down the field, aggressive nature, along and accompany it with, you know, the Edelman, Wes Welker type plays that Brady ran in New England, let alone a few other things that I'm sure they'll do, like we talked about yesterday or the day before with Gronkowski. To where I do think you'll see a nice blend. I still think the meat and potatoes of the offense is going to be Bruce Arians, but you're definitely going to see some of those plays that, hey, Brady feels comfortable in them. Brady knows these type of plays better than Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich. He could teach them.
All right, that was Chris Sims earlier this week on Pro Football Talk with Mike Florio, talking about the new offense in Tampa Bay for Tom Brady. A little bit of a mold of the Brady offense with the Bruce Arians offense. By the way, the team motto, win or lose, we booze, baby. A little bit different from Belichick's motto. So we'll see how that goes. But by the way, we're going to be able to witness all those games. On the schedule right now, there's only 2 conflicts between the Patriots and the Bucs, week 15 and week 17. So you get to see all the Bucs, which is perfect for us. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you until 2:30 when NASCAR takes over. First NASCAR event of the season. Okay, so I want to get to this real quickly. Roger Goodell is back where he's used to being, which is facing bad PR, a bad PR storm because of this new Rooney Rule. And I don't believe anybody's happy with it. I don't know one person right now that's happy with this idea. So just to put it into context, the current Rooney Rule, it requires NFL teams to interview at least one minority candidate for any head coaching job or senior football operations position like GM. And basically, it's supposed to ensure minorities receive consideration for coaching in front office positions. But the problem is, right now, you have 4 non-white head coaches in the league: Mike Tomlin, Ron Rivera, Brian Flores, and Anthony Lynn, and you only have two non-white GMs. So right now there's no denying there's an issue in the league, especially considering that 70% of the rosters are made up of African-American players, right? So there's no denying the issue, and especially when you look at the past few years, it's been a bad look for the league. So think about this. Steve Wilks was fired after 1 year in Arizona. And it's not as if they hired this unbelievable coach. They hired Cliff Kingsbury, who was just fired at Texas Tech. He was 35-40 at Texas Tech, and he was the USC offensive coordinator. He was scheduled to be a coordinator at the college level, not another coach. So he wasn't fired. They didn't fire Steve Wilks because they were getting Dabo Sweeney or Urban Meyer or Nick Saban. No, they were getting Cliff Kingsbury, who was just fired at Texas Tech. Vance Joseph gets 2 years in Denver. His quarterbacks, Trevor Siemian, Brock Osweiler, Paxton Lynch, Case Keenum. Those are the quarterbacks he had in 2 years. So it probably wasn't the coaching. It was probably more so that they couldn't find this thing that you kind of need in the NFL, which is called a competent NFL quarterback. And oh, by the way, they had Joe Flacco last year. Congratulations. Not that he was the coach last year, but that's who they had last year until, of course, they turned it over to the rookie quarterback. But that's a bad look for the NFL when Wilkes only gets 1 year and they hire a guy like Cliff Kingsbury. But the new Rooney Rule, what a disaster. So the new Rooney Rule is if you hire a minority head coach in the draft, or if you hire a minority head coach, I should say, in the draft going into his second year, your third round pick goes up six spots. If you hire a minority general manager, your third round pick goes up 10 spots. And how about this? If you hire both a minority head coach and a general manager, you draft, your slot will increase by 16 spots. So the NFL has done such a great job, like over the past couple of months, giving us entertainment. But this is where they ordinarily are. Bad PR. This just looks dumb. Okay. So if you look at it, I don't understand what they're trying to do. Now, maybe my theory on this, or I should say my theory on this, maybe what Roger Goodell is trying to do is he knows that this is going to get shut down by the owners and it's supposed to go to a vote next week. So what maybe Roger Goodell is trying to put out there is, look, I'm trying to improve things in terms of getting more opportunities for minority head coaching candidates and minority executives, if you will, executive candidates. I'm trying to do this, but look, the owners didn't pass it. Basically, look, see, I tried to do this. Maybe that's what Roger Goodell is trying to do. But nobody believes that this is going to get passed, so it just looks like a farce. It just looks like the league is wanting to grab some attention for trying to do something right, but it's dumb. It doesn't look like it's an intelligent thing to do whatsoever. And Anthony Lynn made a great point about this. He was on CBS Sports Radio with Zach Gelb, and essentially what he said is, I think sometimes you can do the wrong thing while trying to do the right thing. He says there are some qualified applicants, and they need an opportunity. And I think this is out of desperation. This is something that they've thrown out there. And I don't even completely agree with Anthony Lynn. He says the league is doing the wrong thing by trying to do the right thing, essentially. I believe what the league is trying to do is appear they're trying to do the right thing, but not actually doing the right thing. They're trying to make it look like they're trying to make the Rooney Rule better and improve the Rooney Rule and get more opportunities for minority head coaching candidates and minority executives. But all they're really trying to do is put it out publicly that they're trying to do that without actually trying to do that, because the plan they came up with, there is no way that the owners are actually going to pass that. And also think about the credibility factor. Think about the credibility factor. If now somebody gets a job and you're in the locker room as a player and you're thinking to yourself, well, did this guy really deserve the job? Or did they hire the head coach because they knew that they could move up in the drafting process, if you will? What the NFL needs is they need more guys around the sport, African-Americans, that were not players in the league, right? Like Josh McDaniels didn't play in the NFL. Bill Belichick didn't play in the NFL. Where are those candidates, right? We don't really have those candidates. The only African-American candidates it seems like we have in the NFL are guys that played in the league. And that's what we need to try to incorporate, more guys that didn't play in the NFL that get an opportunity to join coaching staffs, etc. So there is clearly an issue, but this idea that the league has come up with, it's just a really, really bad idea that is never going to work. It's never going to work. And the other thing I would say is this. Roger Goodell, it seems like they're always on the bad side of PR. Like if you think back to the Ray Rice suspension, for example, he originally suspends Ray Rice for 2 games. And then the video comes out and he suspends him indefinitely, right? So you knew what he was accused of doing. You knew that he was arrested. And now you're saying, okay, now since we've seen the video, we're suspending him indefinitely. But a court said, well, Roger, you can't suspend the guy again for the same thing. You're suspending him for the same thing. That's double jeopardy. You can't do that, right? And then you look at Deflategate. Think about how bad of a look that was for the league. The only reason they won that was because Roger Goodell is judge, jury, and executioner, right? That's the only reason they won that. It's the only reason. Because they leaked, the NFL did, a fake report to ESPN. They told Chris Mortensen 11 of the 12 footballs were underinflated, if you will, when the reality was there was only one. Okay, so the NFL has done such a bad job in terms of PR over the years, even the way they handled the Bounty Gate suspensions. Did anybody think Sean Payton deserved a year? So the NFL always looks bad from a PR perspective. Over the past few months, they've looked better because when everybody said, oh, I can't be done, they pulled off the draft, it went seamlessly. They pulled off free agency, it went seamlessly. And everybody was entertained. When we don't have actual sporting events right now, everybody was happy to have those certain things to talk about. Right, free agency was as big as it's ever been. Part of it is Brady's a free agent. But secondarily, part of it is the fact that we have nothing else to talk about in terms of the sports world. We don't have games, so that was interesting. The draft was awesome. Everybody had a lot of fun watching the draft, right? But then this. What a bad PR look for the NFL. It just made no sense. And in fact, it feels like to me it'd be more insulting than anything else to African-American candidates. And the thing, if I was an owner in the league, I would not like this idea by Roger Goodell whatsoever, because basically what Roger Goodell is saying, we have a massive race issue when we're looking at hiring candidates. Now, that's obviously true, but I'm saying what the owners are looking at this as is Roger Goodell is highlighting we have a major issue, right? We have a major issue in terms of hiring minority candidates, and now everybody in the world knows it, and it's so bad that we're actually going to incentivize you to hire African-American candidates. We're going to increase your draft stock in the third round. That looks bad. That makes the owners look even worse, right? So I just don't understand how anybody thought this would look good from the NFL's perspective. Brian Barrett with you until 2:30 before NASCAR takes over. The number is 617-779-7937. Okay, so tonight, and Mark James just had the director of The Last Dance on about 2 hours ago. You're going to get the finale of The Last Dance, the last two episodes, 9 and 10, which I've been watching, I'm sure most of you have been watching, considering the fact that there's not a whole lot on TV. So it actually worked out well in terms of the ratings for ESPN with this thing. Obviously, they didn't want this. They wanted the NBA playoffs and they wanted life to be normal. But nonetheless, they had this documentary that basically goes on the air. Everybody wants to see and reminisce on the Michael Jordan era. One thing that has stuck out to me about this documentary, if I was Scottie Pippen, I would be pissed. This whole documentary has just made Scottie Pippen look bad. This is a guy that was unquestionably the second best player on six championship teams. Not one or two, no. He was the second best player on six championship teams. And they had that one episode where they talk about, oh, he bloomed late and he was a manager of his college team and then he got the opportunity to start. He wasn't even in the NCAA. He was at an NIA school, right? So he gets this opportunity, comes into league, eventually he develops, etc. Okay. But other than that, it's been all bad things about Scottie Pippen. It's been his contract dispute. It's been the fact that Michael Jordan, still to this day, said Scottie Pippen should have had surgery before the season instead of waiting until basically right before the season. So he missed a good chunk of that final season, 97-98. And Michael Jordan still not backing him for that. His contract dispute. And then the fact that when he was the best player on a team that won 55 games, he was pissed off that he wasn't getting the final shot. I'm not defending what he did, but that was like a major storyline for like half an hour. So we're talking about arguably the best perimeter defender in the history of the NBA. This is Kawhi Leonard before Kawhi Leonard in terms of what he did on the perimeter defensively. Okay, we're talking about a guy as the second best player on six championship teams. How does Scottie Pippen come across in this documentary? Nobody's opinion got higher of Scottie Pippen during this documentary. Like Michael Jordan, if you were a Michael Jordan guy to begin with, you're like, oh, this is awesome, all this stuff, Michael Jordan. You're like, you're getting into, oh, Michael Jordan, I love the fact how competitive he is and all this, blah, blah, blah. He's making up all these stories to get himself motivated. With Scottie Pippen, you're looking back and you're saying to yourself, hey, he's kind of not a good teammate, right? Wait, hold on. And some of the younger audience, I'm sure you didn't even remember this. Well, or you didn't weren't alive for it. Wait, Scottie Pippen didn't go onto the court in the final play of the game because he didn't get the opportunity to get the final shot. And oh, by the way, I love how misleading that was too. They don't show the play before that where Scottie Pippen is pissed off with Tony Kukoc. It's like, we didn't get the whole story. There's no defending it, but you do realize that before that, Tony Kukoc threw Scottie Pippen a hot potato with the shot clock running out, right? And he just like threw one up and it hit the side of the backboard. Scottie Pippen was pissed about that beforehand. So there was that element to it as well. But, and especially the younger audience that never saw Scottie Pippen play, you must think that this guy is the worst teammate of all time.
Worst team out of all. Wait, he said on the documentary that he didn't want to ruin his summer. That's why he delayed his surgery. I mean, and the fact everyone said, well, he got the contract. It was stupid of Scottie Pippen to sign that contract extension. Well, let me just point this out. Now, and Jerry Reinsdorf in the documentary actually says, hey, I told Scotty not to sign this deal because it looked like a big deal at the time and it was a long-term contract. But by the end of the contract, Scottie Pippen was significantly underpaid, right? That was one portion of one of the episodes. But also remember this when you're talking about Scottie Pippen. This is a guy that was essentially taking care of eight people in his family, two of which, one of his brothers and his father, were both in wheelchairs. So when you get that contract offer put in front of you, when you're Scottie Pippen and it's life-changing money, you're thinking to yourself, okay, I have to make sure I sign this because I want to make sure my family's okay. So that whole contract dispute, at the end of that, when Scottie Pippen's asking for more money, that's in his right to do that. All of you guys out here have been defending Brady for the past couple of years because he had a contract dispute. Same thing happened with Scottie Pippen. Once he realized that he deserved more money, he asked for it, and this is after he took the contract to make sure his family was okay. So Jerry Reinsdorf coming out and saying, hey, essentially, I told Scottie not to sign it. Well, okay, it's a totally different when he hadn't had a big contract yet and he's got to take care of all these people. What is he going to do? He wants to have the security to make sure, okay, I get this deal done, because what happens if in the following season I break my leg, then I'm never getting the money that ultimately I deserve in the NBA. So that's a tough bet on yourself when it's not just betting on yourself. You have all these people in your family that you have to take care of. Okay, and one of the other things that I would point out in this documentary with the whole situation in the late 90s, I've come to the conclusion, and now you can watch these games all online. You can watch them on NBA TV. He's been replaying a lot of them. The first three-peat for the Bulls, significantly more impressive than the second three-peat for the Bulls, even though they had the record breaker in terms of wins, and then eventually the Warriors broke it, but they didn't end up winning the championship. Because if you look at the way the league was orchestrated in the late 90s, one of the underrated parts to that is you had all these expansion teams come in. They basically added five new teams in the 90s, so the talent was more spread out. Like, if you look at the teams that they beat in the first three-peat, that Suns team was incredible. Okay, that Suns team was awesome. That Blazers team was awesome. Now, the Lakers were towards the end, and really, they shouldn't have beat the Blazers in the previous series. The Blazers kind of choked that one away. But the first three-peat, to me, is significantly more impressive. And when you look at the second one, at the end of it, 97-98, I mean, those guys were done. Jordan's already pissed off. Scottie Pippen wants out of town. So this idea that the Bulls had a lot more left, I'm not so sure they did. You look at Jordan throughout that season. He looks absolutely fatigued mentally. He looks like he's absolutely exhausted by the tail end of that run. He really does. And one other thing is, can we stop with this whole thing about how athletes are so much more different today than they were then? Okay, yeah, they play the game differently. That's certainly the case. But there was like this whole perception, hey, Jordan hated everybody that he played against in the 90s. Did he really? He was golfing with Danny Ainge the day before a playoff game. Okay, and I guess this technically was in the 80s. They went golfing. I listened to a podcast that Danny Ainge had on the Low Post with Zach Lowe from ESPN. They legitimately played 36 holes the day before Michael Jordan played the Boston Celtics in a postseason game. So this idea like, oh, all these guys are friends now. Michael Jordan had friends in the NBA in the 80s and the 90s. Charles Barkley and I understand their relationship is not what it used to be, and really they don't have a relationship anymore. But they used to be like best friends in the 1990s. So there's this whole idea that guys weren't friends in the 1990s in the NBA. That just isn't true. It's not true. And basically, we've had that proven to us by Michael Jordan in this documentary, and Danny Ainge helped assist with that. And also, the other thing, I hated how they gave Jordan all this credit for working out to get ready for the Pistons. Kind of your job, man. Kind of your job to get bigger. Kind of your job to be in tip-top shape. I don't understand why he gets credit for that. He gets a bonus for that. Come on. Oh, well, Michael was getting pushed around, so he had to get into the weight room. Yeah, you think? No kidding. But I do look forward to episodes 9 and 10, despite the fact that I've got a lot of issues with it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.